If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
He does the research, analyzes the data, and checks the variables. He even submits his findings for peer review. He's the only man with a lab coat made entirely from NFL bed sheets. He's data scientist Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus. Only on the program.
Yes, indeed. And he's with us on our Sprint guest line. He joins us right now. Mr. Eager, sir, how are you?
I'm doing well, Saran. How about you?
No complaints. We've got college football that will start in our next weekend, by the way. I'm looking forward to that. And I'm going to Vegas to put down some heavy dollar wagers. I mean, I might get to $20 on some of these. It's going to be big time gambling for my futures bets. So, you know, look out if the lines start moving all over the place, because I know you like to study the lines. I just know that me and my heavy hitter buddies are going to be dropping some futures action out there in Vegas this weekend.
Well, Saran, if you ever have to chase, that Hawaii game is on at like 10:30 Eastern. So it's sort of that perfect last second chance for college football.
Florida State, the early one, and then chase with the Hawaii game. I like it. I like it. Good plan.
Yeah, perfect.
Good plan. All right. Let's start with the news of the day. The Chiefs, and they still haven't made it official, have they?
Not yet.
Still not yet. But reports are that the Chiefs have agreed to a one-year deal with Jeff Allen. I say that this means whatever the hell plan A was somewhere on the roster hasn't worked out. Now, maybe they're bringing Jeff Allen in and they're going to release a corner or a linebacker or something. But I think more likely, I think we have to look at this and say, Wiley didn't grade well. Cam Irving didn't grade well all of last year at guard. And if they're going to Jeff Allen, who really hasn't had a very good season, he's been a guy basically for the last 4 years. You got to go back to 15, at least in the Pro Football Focus grades, on when he had a good year. This would seem to be somewhat of an act of desperation.
Yeah, it would appear so, right? I mean, Allen had a pretty good season with the Chiefs in 15. He left to go to Houston, struggled there. To the point where he was back with Kansas City last year and now back here. And I think, as you said, they've tried a bunch of solutions at that left guard position for a few years here. They're obviously, also reeling from losing Mitch Morse in the offseason to Buffalo. Cam Irving, from the reports I saw, wasn't even playing. He's not even played it as a starter. He played so poorly last season. For them, I think it's just trying to sort of patch up that interior. Luckily for them, they have both of the tackle positions pretty sewn up, and we know that tackle, along with center, they're sort of the three most important positions on the offensive line. Oftentimes, you can, and they have sloughed off at guard and not seen a ton of consequences offensively as a result.
The one day they did was the Rams game. They got worked over there. Now, again, they still hung 50-plus on the board. If their defense plays well, then they can get away with even a bad day at left guard, right? If you can hang 50, you ought to have a win.
Right, and we're starting to see, for example, the article that we had on PFF.com last week, quarterbacks are far more in control of their pressure rates than I think previously thought of or previously understood. Mahomes composes himself so well in the pocket that oftentimes, even when players are weaker in front of them, you can throw the ball more quickly, as we saw with the Patriots against the Chiefs, but you can also – if a quarterback's able to move back there, Aaron Donald can, beat up on the left guard all game and not make as big of an impact necessarily as one would expect.
All right. Do you believe that they got Patrick Mahomes? This is a theory Tim Grunhardt threw out there, that they saw their first 3-4 action because they've been playing against a 4-3 defense. By the way, their first five games of the year, I looked it up, are against 4-3s. Then their next three are against 3-4 defenses. So that they've spent all their time against 4-3s. Andy Reid said what he felt like he had to say about the ones being out there. And really the ones were, it was Patrick Mahomes that came out, that he looked at it. They weren't ready to block a 3-4, an odd man front. And he said, all right, get the guy the hell out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you and I have said this to each other privately, I don't think Mahomes should be playing much anyway.
Yes.
But looking at the offensive line, it's certainly not trivial, to face those different fronts. That being said, the majority of the time in the NFL now, you're in nickel or dime, in which case the distinction between an odd man front and an even front is a little bit overblown. But yeah, absolutely. I think, that's really what the preseason is for, is getting live bullets against teams that do things different than your team does, as their base look.
We just don't want to see them risk the quarterback. So go ahead, everybody else, get in there and give it the old college try. Just get the guy that matters the most the hell out of there.
Yeah, right, absolutely. I mean, I think, it just doesn't end well when your quarterback gets hurt, especially, there's only a handful of backup quarterbacks in the league I would even trust to go .500 during the course of a season, let alone, take a team to a Super Bowl. And the Chiefs are certainly, obviously a top five team in terms of Vegas odds to win the Super Bowl. So they got to take care of their most important asset. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do the last two games here.
All right. You and I have talked about this before. So this is for the listeners out there. I feel compelled to say overrated does not mean sucks. Okay. You can be the third rated guy and be fifth best in the world, and you're overrated by two spots. So I want to be clear when I ask this question about overrated. I am not saying that Kareem Hunt sucks. But is it possible, Eric, that Kareem Hunt is overrated? I bring that up because Curtis pointed out that in his first five games with the Chiefs, and by the way, he played 27 with the Chiefs. In his first five games with the Chiefs, he had four 100-yard rushing days. In his next 22, he had three. All right, now. He scored 14 times last year in 11 games, 7 on the ground, 7 in the receiving part. It's, again, not to say he sucks, but this thought that the Chiefs are really going to struggle to run the ball because it's such a massive step back from Kareem Hunt. And you've made it clear. People have heard Eric before know that he's not, don't be taking any running backs in the top five in real NFL drafts. And, just by its very nature, he's one of the guys that has led the statistical revolution on that you should not be popping for running backs in the top five picks or blowing up your salary cap to retain them. But is it possible that even the effect that we're going to see, here, that Kareem Hunt is, even for whatever rating you give a running back, everybody else seems to think he's better than he really is when it comes to carrying the rock?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Kareem Hunt, in terms of talent and in terms of what actually sticks at the running back position, is every bit as good as people say he is in terms of breaking tackles, catching the football, doing things with the ball after the catch. That being said, what we're seeing in Kansas City and what we've seen in Kansas City is the repeated overratedness of the guy that plays running back in terms of their value to the team. So it certainly was a blow to the talent at the running back position that they had last year to let him go. But we saw with Damian Williams, a guy who produced extremely well down the stretch for them. And we're seeing in the preseason now, again, take it with a grain of salt, but Darwin Thompson's a guy who has done a lot of the things that Hunt has done, breaking tackles, getting yards after contact, those types of things. So while I think Hunt is every bit as good as what people say he is, I just don't think he's going to have the impact on the Chiefs. His absence is not going to have the same impact as everybody says it will.
How important is the blocking part of things? Like, I was kind of surprised when Josh Caldwell got released. He's been picked up by the Bears. I thought he looked like a pretty good runner, albeit against Scrubs, but with Scrubs around him. I kind of liked what I saw with him carrying the ball, has the size to pick up the blitzes. I think one of the reasons why he may have been cut is because Derwin Thompson, all rookies have a learning curve with their blitz pickups, and that's a very important part of the equation to the passing game is the running back when he's got to stay home and pick up that blitz. Is it just kind of a rule of thumb you're not going to have two rookie running backs because you just can't have enough plays? Because Kareem Hunt even struggled with that as a rookie, and they were taking him out of the game at times that it was obvious, particularly in the first half of the year, that they just didn't trust him back there in some obvious passing downs. Is it as simple as that? You can carry one newbie who doesn't know the blocking schemes?
That's a good theory, I think. I think probably the more simple explanation is that they have Damian Williams and Carlos Hyde, and Carlos Hyde is somebody that they've put at least a little bit of investment in terms of this season, not necessarily all that much guaranteed money and everything, but just having a veteran there And, you know, so I just think it's going to be, if you want to bring in a running back, you know, a couple running backs who are rookies, you have to jettison a veteran. And while I don't necessarily think Carlos Hyde is a lock to make the team, I think that, you know, he's going to get a longer look. And so, you know, the weaker of those rookie running backs is probably going to be let go.
We're talking to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. He is the data scientist, appears regularly with us here on our Sprint guest line. D-line depth. The Chiefs defensive line we know is pretty good with its 1-2 punch with Frank Clark and Chris Jones up front. But they also appear to have some pretty good depth. If Tano Passanio had some pretty good numbers this last go-round, seems to be certainly back at a spot where it would seem obvious to anyone who had ever watched the sport of football he should be. That's on the defensive line. And Breland Speaks has had a moment here or there. What is the value? Is there any data that supports that? Listen, a deep defensive line. We know everyone does rotations, but is there any data to quantify that just being deep means you win a lot more in the fourth quarter on the defensive line?
Yeah, that's a really hard problem to untangle because every time I've looked, it's sort of tough because you want to like look and say, okay, if a guy doesn't play a lot of snaps during the course of the game, is he more fresh? But then you have the confounder of, well, a guy that plays most of the game is probably one of the best defensive linemen on the team. And sort of those types of players are good enough to maintain their pressure rates. That being said, obviously it's great to have depth. I think for them, what's great is the versatility that they have. You know, for years we saw that they had Holly, they had Houston, they had Ford all on the same team, and they were reluctant to play all three at the same time. And now what we saw, you know, in the first team defense, we saw Tano Passanio playing inside, getting a push, get three pressures against the Steelers. You know, I think he was very impressive there, and that was the position he really played at Villanova as well. And so, you know, when you have Ogba, who has that same versatility, you have Okafor, you have Clark, you have a couple nose tackles in Saunders and Nnadi that I think are good, and then obviously Chris Jones, sort of that John Randall-type player inside. So they just what's great about them is that they have a lot of versatility all around the defensive line and in the pieces that they can use, and I think that will really only help them, especially considering how weak I think their secondary will be on the outside.
Is there any, you know, anyone you like to be like a real surprise? Is Passanio the guy that could kind of, because he just hasn't played that much, that maybe could be kind of a breakout guy on the defensive line?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, that draft, that entire 2017 draft was all about, you know, boom or bust players. We've already seen that. You know, the first round pick was the MVP of the league. Kareem Hunt was boom and then bust. Passanio was that player, you know, who, you know, was very limited in terms of his football experience, but very high on the measurables. And, you know, to the point where we watched film on him at, you know, Division I AA school, you know, he flashed quite a bit, but he was always going to be a project. And then you take that player and then you make him switch positions. It just wasn't going to work there. But now at least he's doing things he's comfortable with. And I think, you know, he's just a big body with a lot of athleticism. We've performed well so far. I think that there's a chance that he could be a player that's, you know, sneakily good for them.
We're talking to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus here in the program. Mecole Hardman had less than 1,000 yards receiving. We looked it up. Chris Conley had, just under 2,000?
1938
in his 4 years at Georgia. Hardman played 3 years at Georgia, had less than 1,000. So theoretically, he could have been the number one guy, had 1,000 plus, and been right there with Chris Conley. Is there any kind of correlation to hanging stats on the board in college at Power Five schools that you can correlate to production, or is there, as we hope, that's not really that big of an indicator as to what a guy's going to be in the pros?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a correlation between, you know, basically market share at the college level and production at the NFL level. Of course, all of these things are extremely noisy. But, you know, basically the idea is that if you're good enough to be thrown to a lot, and whether that's air yards or targets or however you measure it, your chances of being a good NFL player at the position are just higher. But that being said, I think you sort of have to think a little harder about those particular teams, the Georgias, the Clemsons. I mean, Clemson's going to have four receivers probably this year that are going to be drafted at some point in time. So they're not all going to get the target shares that a guy who's an amazing player at Washington's going to get, or Washington State. And so, you know, you have to be a little bit careful there. I think Hardman was really very much caught in the numbers game along with being raw at Georgia. And that's really, you know, where, you know, he kind of came up short. The nice part about the Chiefs now, you know, with Tariq Hill, his situation sort of resolved. Sammy Watkins at this point being healthy. DeMarcus Robinson emerging, I think, is probably a 3 or 4 target. Is that Hardman really gets to play that role as well for the Chiefs. He's not going to be required to be a number one, and he was never required to be a number one at Georgia, just a guy who is very capable of taking the top off the defense and doing some of the things that, frankly, the Chiefs wanted DeAnthony Thomas to do, and he never really could.
All right, one of the things we've talked about is the schedule. I do think that the schedule, and I was on in Arkansas, and buddy JB down at 92.1 and Northwest Arkansas brought this up. He was talking about the schedule being challenging. I don't hear anybody else talking about that on a national level, that at Jacksonville, at the Raiders, everyone looks at that and goes, well, those are two bad teams. Versus the Ravens, oh, they were kind of a surprise. At the Lions, not a playoff team. So everyone looks at it and says, okay, 3 of your first 4 games are not against playoff teams. Okay, but they're on the road, right? And I think Jacksonville, I always kind of say, if you want to figure out what a team's going to be this year, look at their last 2 years. Because, you know, you talk about the fluctuations that can be there. Jacksonville's probably somewhere between last year's bad year and 2 years ago's really good year. They also have Nick Foles, who could solidify the quarterback position. Raiders in year 2. Now, those three, and then when you come home, and we'll see, and I know you guys were talking on your podcast about what's going on with Andrew Luck and whether or not this is going to be like his shoulder and he's not going to be playing. But if he is playing, you then come home against playoff team Colts, playoff team Texans. That can be kind of a salty first 6 games for the Chiefs. Am I reading that schedule right, or is that just my worrisome fandom that has me sweating a schedule that isn't nearly as hard? I should just be worrying more about last year's records on those first 3 of the, on the road.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that looks tough on the surface. But at the same time, you look at a Jacksonville team, their quarterback, Nick Foles. A lot of us have positive feelings about Foles, but a lot of his statistics last year were pretty fleeting in terms of stability. He was the top-rated quarterback under pressure a season ago if you lower the snap threshold. That tends to regress, so I don't think we're going to see the Nick Foles who we saw in the Super Bowl or even the playoffs in 2018. The AFC South, I think, is more down than people will give it credit for. Houston's a team that, you know, kind of got by on a very weak schedule a season ago. They now have the hardest schedule in the NFL this season. A lot of that is because they play Kansas City and the Los Angeles Chargers. So I don't think that's as tough of a game as people think. And then again, with Indianapolis, I think, you know, I like Indianapolis as a concept moving forward, but I think for this particular season, they're still not necessarily that juggernaut there, especially defensively, and the Chiefs get them at home. And the clear thing with the Chiefs' schedule is also they just have this built-in advantage where they are a West Coast division team that plays in the Central Time Zone. And so, you know, when they get to face some of their division rivals and teams out west, they face them in the morning, basically. And then the other kicker, and this is why Kansas City, in my opinion, is firmly the favorite to win the AFC West, is the Chiefs don't even play a road game against the Chargers. Against their most, you know, potent division foe, they basically have a home game and a neutral site game. And so, you know, that puts the Chargers at a significant disadvantage relative to the Chiefs. And we know that if you can win the division, if you can get a bye, a lot of sins are forgiven in that case. So while I do think their schedule early looks daunting, I think it's less so than people think.
Are you telling me that Mexico doesn't love the Chargers?
I don't even think Los Angeles loves the Chargers. So I'm a little skeptical on the home field advantage for the Chargers in Mexico.
Okay. All right. Fair enough on that one. All right. What do you think about some of the things that are going on around the NFL? First of all, can you just confirm for me that giving, like, even talking about $40 million for Dak Prescott, Jerry Jones not laughing his agents out of the building is ridiculous. Like that if they're going to go more than $30 million, the Cowboys are doomed. Just don't spend much on that because it doesn't affect the Chiefs unless they would see him in the Super Bowl, and they're in a snowball's chance in hell that the Cowboys are going to the Super Bowl. So, but is do you find that as comical as I do?
I think the way that the quarterback position is currently valued, Prescott at 40 is not a very good bet at all. I think if quarterbacks were properly valued relative to their value to the team, 40 would be reasonable for a middle-of-the-pack player like Prescott. But because the idea of a rookie contract exists, because that sufficiently suppresses the quarterbacks like Big Ben, eventually Mahomes, Luck, all those players, Ryan, Breeze, I think $40 million a year for Prescott is not a good bet. So the league should be valuing quarterbacks more, but I just don't think Prescott's the hill to die on in that case.
All right, Andrew Luck, if he is down, the Colts are done. How many games does he have to miss? I know on the PFF forecast, your podcast, you are not a big believer in Jacoby Brissett. Does that, if he's down four games, are they cooked?
I think Brissett's a good backup, but yeah, I think they're probably more in that 5-11 to 8-8 range. You know, the only thing that keeps them afloat, I think, is the fact that their division's probably weaker than people perceive. I think Tennessee's down a little bit. Jacksonville and Houston are sort of like coin flips to me. So I think that they win some games based upon the fact that they get to play in that division, but they're going to be down there. And I think that that division is won by an 8-8 team if Andrew Luck's hurt.
All right, what is Josh Gordon getting cleared? And let's say Bill Belichick was less than, you know, demonstrative about him being back, or at least back in good graces with the team, which I don't know why they'd go ahead and exercise their option on him if they didn't plan on bringing him back. So I assume that's just Belichick being testy with the media and not wanting to give anything away. But if Josh Gordon is back and playing like he played last year, how much does that help pick up? I know they won the Super Bowl without him, but they also don't have Rob Gronkowski. How much better do the Patriots get if Josh Gordon's back in the mix?
Well, he averaged almost 2 yards per route run last year. So he's one of the – and that's a pretty gold standard for receivers in terms of efficiency. So even though, you know, he's got all the personal baggage with him, he's a pretty good receiver. And I think if he's on that team, I think he really helps them out, especially without Gronkowski. Edelman gets to play in the slot more so. He oftentimes will play on the outside if he's the only receiving threat for them. So, you know, if he can, you know, sort of play more on the inside there, then I think they have a pretty good set of receivers. If Gordon can't be counted on, then I think it's a little bit tougher for them without, you know, a competent tight end necessarily, and with really only one established threat in the receiving core, they might struggle, although they are really good, as we saw in the AFC Championship game, of throwing to their backs, on third downs and stuff like that. I think that they'll struggle, obviously, with the lack of personnel.
Derwin James being down for the Chargers for some length of time, how much does that hurt their defense?
Quite a bit. I mean, he was, you know, he's good at everything. So, yeah, he rushes the passer weirdly. He can cover tight ends. I saw a stat out there, you know, basically, you know, when quarterbacks throw to tight ends against him, they become the worst quarterback in the league. He's pretty good deep. I mean, he's you know, probably the you know, if I'm going to take one player from that defense moving forward, it's him. So it clearly hurts them. It's just another example of, you know, the Chargers being the Chargers.
Yeah, like they cannot get to a regular season healthy. I mean, under no circumstances. Keenan Allen, I mean, what has anybody been more cursed? Like, what did the Spanos family do to the football gods? Did they whiz on a grave or something?
Well, you can't spell LAC without ACL, Soren. So.
Spoken like a scientist. Spoken like a scientist. Eric Eager is with us on the Sprint guest line. Time for our final four. It is brought to you by our friends at the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute, KC's first and only hospital that's dedicated exclusively to orthopedics, with an ortho-urgent care that's open 7 days a week for treating high school football injuries. It's something that they can handle for you. Find out more at kcoi.com or by calling 913-319-7633. Eric, I'll start you with this one. Do you know, can you bring your own booze on an airplane and consume it? Yes or no?
No.
Do you know that, or are you taking a guess?
70-30 that I'm right.
Yeah, you're correct. You're correct. I did not know that on my last flight, and I was chastised by the stewardess. I did not know you can bring it on.
That's a decent risk to take.
Yeah, you can bring it on. That's legal. You just got to put it in the little pint or quart bag, right in the little airplane or the airplane size containers. You can bring them on. Bring on all you want. You just can't consume it. That was news to me. You let me on with it. Why can't I consume it? I don't get it. All right, but hey, rules are rules, and I'll never break it again. The number three receiver productivity-wise for the Chiefs will be who? I'm assuming Hill and Kelce is the top two. Who's number three?
Watkins.
All right, so you like Sammy. That's good. Got him on one of my dynasty teams. All right. Have you ever seen an independent league baseball game?
I got a baseball signed by Daryl Strawberry at a St. Paul Saints game once.
Yes. Awesome. I don't think we're going to be watching anymore. I'll get to this story in a minute. I don't think we're going to be watching any more independent league baseball here in KC, at least not based upon the story that broke a few minutes ago about the Kansas City T-Bones being evicted from their home for lack of paying their rent. So we'll get to that in a minute. And finally, and most importantly, I know the gym is an important thing for you, hitting the gym, former college football player, and listening to the PFF Forecast podcast that you have. You guys have your Tales from the Cincinnati Y. I'm curious, have you ever been to the gym in fuzzy pajama pants? I know you've been in pajama pants. I know you've been in fuzzy sweats, but have you ever gone in fuzzy PJs?
More than I'd like to admit.
Perfect. I can just see it. Had I been to the gym anytime recently, I could probably get a visual in my head, but I haven't. So I'll work on it. Eric, always great talking to you, buddy. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Eric Eager, he's the best. Pro Football Focus, they do phenomenal work. And Eric, the tip of the spear in breaking down the NFL, and I do invite you to check out their podcast. If you're a football fan, a football nerd, you're going to love it. It's the PFF Forecast. Eric Eager with us here in the program. And Curtis, the breaking news is?
The unified government of Wyandotte County and KCK will evict the Kansas City T-Bones from the county-owned stadium in Village West after the team went months without paying its utility and rent payments. They say the team owed more than $687,000 in current and past due utility payments, additionally $75,000 in rent payments. As of August 16th, they had made only three of the 48 monthly payments of $1,678. August 16th, the notice requires to have all property and fixtures removed from the stadium by 5 p.m. on September 13th.
Well, that sucks.
They end the season on September 2nd.
Also, they get to finish the season?
Yeah.
They're letting them finish the season. Okay, that's
11
good.
Days after the end of the season, they will be.
Well, I know out. There were said to be financial problems. I think this has been looming and that they were trying to sell the team. This blows. I think the T-Bones, I really like the T-Bones.
Yeah.
It's a great product for the cost, but apparently the cost is not enough to cover what it takes to play in that park. If you're
3 of 48.
Yeah, but if you're asking, like, why do they leave them in there? Well, who else is taking over a minor league ballpark and paying you rent?
Yeah. It's not a warehouse.
Stay the course and hope for turn. I mean, seriously, I mean, here's the unfortunate part. It's probably going to be torn down. Right? Unless another independent baseball team wants to give it a go, what else are you going to use a roughly 8,000 or 9,000 seat? Mm-hmm. Great ballpark, by the way. Fantastic ballpark. What the hell else are you going to use it for?
2003 when they started playing there.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
I hate to hear that. A lot of good people worked really hard for the T-Bones, and they put out a great product. So, sad news coming out today as the T-Bones evicted from their home. They will finish out the season there, which wraps up, you say, Curtis, on September 3rd?
September
2nd. So, still some time to go check out the T-Bones, and we invite you to do it. We will take a break here in the program. Our thanks to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. Talk a little more football when we come back.
New time, same team. The program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. Clemson, number one in the AP poll. Since the AP poll began in 1950, how many teams have gone wire to wire as number one?
Bama did it, didn't they? No, really, huh? USC did it, didn't they?
2004.
Huskers did it.
Nope. I thought they did too. In 95, they did not.
Really?
Florida was the number one team early in the year in 2000, or in 95. Team that Nebraska would eventually slaughter.
Well, and the Gators didn't in 96 because they lost a game.
Nope.
It's pretty much got to be an undefeated. So we've got what, USC?
In 04.
And
that's the only one.
That's the only one so far?
Named.
Since when?
1950.
Well, there has to be a few others in there, like OU. Is OU done it in there? Mm-mm.
Did the U do it?
Nope.
According, question's the worst.
According to ESPN stats and info, it's one. Happened twice.
Wow.
Florida State in 99. The okay. Chris Wienke, Peter Warwick.
Didn't they have a loss that year? Or no, were they undefeated when they played Virginia
Wire
Tech?
To wire. In fact, the last time a team not named Alabama or Clemson was the number one team was Ohio State, but it was back in 2015. That's how much those two teams have dominated college football the last three seasons. No one's even been number one for a week other than those two since Ohio State, I think, in week 9 in 2015.
So we talked earlier about, you know, can the Northern schools, we had the question, Kurt asked us, you know, he's a Husker fan. He's like, you know, listen, can Nebraska get back and they be a national champion again? And I said, absolutely they can, although I think it's harder now than it was for Tom Osborne. And I do think there's something to the Southern, you know, the warm weather. And maybe what we need to be calling it is as much as it's the warm weather as it is the coastal schools. Because Oregon's popped in there. If you go to Northern schools, they popped in there. We went and looked at it, and if you just take schools far from the water, we don't have a distance. We could probably go look and figure out, you know, how far is Tuscaloosa from the Gulf and all that. We could come up with a mileage on these schools for just being ranked number one.
For any week in the AP poll.
For any week in the AP poll. You know, because in Oregon's really the only one north of the Mason-Dixon line that's been number one, but they've had a number of weeks at number one throughout the time.
8 weeks overall.
But since Nebraska and Michigan split a national title in what year?
97. In fact, there were three northern teams that were number one for at least 1 week that year. Penn State was number one for 6 weeks. So three northern teams were number one in that year.
And then Nebraska and Michigan split the national championship. But it's only been a handful of weeks total. What are the weeks?
Nebraska was number one for 9 weeks in 2000. They were knocked off by Oklahoma, and Oklahoma would then be number one until the end of the season. Missouri was number one for 1 week in 2007.
Why, it goes all the way to seven.
All the way up to seven.
Okay.
And Notre Dame was number one for 3 weeks in 2012.
And then that's it. The Buckeyes.
Other than Ohio State, which is our premise.
Other than Ohio State, and by the way, all the Ohio States are with Urban Meyer, correct? Only recently, or do they have some
other? Jim Tressel in 02, they won the national title in 02.
Okay, so so other than Ohio State, those are the only other schools, you know, not near water, and Oregon's the only northern one near water that's been number one.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
No. And that's a total of 13 weeks since 1998. That's 21 seasons, 16 polls. That's
336
polls. 14 weeks have been occupied by
a school.
Yeah.
Not named Ohio State.
And nine of those were Nebraska in 2000. So let's just go since 01. The last 18 seasons, 4 weeks. Missouri in 07 for 1 week. Notre Dame in 2012 for 3 weeks. Every other week has been
a water school,
Ohio State, or a Southern team.
Wow. And the water schools are USC and Oregon.
Yeah, essentially.
You know, those are the only two.
Right. I didn't know what to call. I mean, I don't think people think of Oregon as a northern team, and they are the northern half of the country. But you don't think of them, let's go out to the north and play Oregon. You know, any West Coast team, even Washington isn't considered a northern team.
They're pretty damn northern.
Called the Pac Northwest.
Right, but I mean, no one thinks of who's Washington? It's a West Coast team. They don't think of. They put them all kind of all in one box.
Is that what they call the division? They don't call that. It's called the Pac-12. Pacific.
No, I was talking about the region that they play in. It's called the Pacific Northwest, Washington reside.
Well, they are. We're not denying.
But when I think of a northern team, you don't think of Washington.
Right. But no, I think it's of note. And Washington's
and
coming around.
Stone's throw from Canada.
I think you got to have a hell of a coach. If you have a hell of a coach and you have tradition and a commitment financially to the sport, you can win. You know, I think Jim Harbaugh would have won 10 games at Kansas. Had he stayed long enough. I mean, I don't think he was going to do it the next year. But had Jim Harbaugh been hired as the coach at Kansas, the way he was had agreed to take the job under Lou Perkins, but Lou Perkins couldn't wait a few weeks for him to coach the bowl game with Stanford. I think he would have won 10 games, I'll say within 3 or 4 years, had he stayed there that long. I think, you know, I don't know that the Niners come calling if he takes over Kansas and goes 4-8 in year one. You know, he might have gotten 3 or 4 years there. And if the Niners don't hire him, who knows who else was going to hire him? The Niners hired the guy who had been at Stanford right in their backyard and was immensely popular. Maybe they would have. Maybe like, hey, listen, we know you're turning around Kansas. We'll hire you. I just think it would have been a different vibe. But it does speak to the job that Scott Frost has at Nebraska and the job that Les Miles has at Kansas and the job that Barry Odom has at Missouri and the job that Chris Klieman has at K-State. I mean, I think it's a tougher job.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt. So we'll see where it goes. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. A lot of need-to-knows for you. Some very, very important stuff that you need to know. Included in that, we have figured out that Andy Reid should have somebody other than Patrick Mahomes throw the ball at least once per game, every game. If you've been listening to all 4 hours of the program, and why wouldn't you? Tommy Moe just totally wrong earlier in the program. Hour number one, we'll explain why when we come back.
A new way to end your day. The program, now from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Need to Know is brought to you by 360 Vodka, Kansas City's hometown vodka, and a proud sponsor of Sports Radio 810. Award-winning, smooth, refreshing, and perfect for summer. Pick up a bottle of 360 Vodka today. 360 Vodka, 40% alcohol by volume, distilled from grain, earth-friendly distilling company, Weston, Missouri.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
All right, busy day here, as Mondays often are when it comes to news. First of all, locally, the Kansas City T-Bones have been evicted from their park. It's not Community America anymore.
I don't know what it's called right now.
I don't either. But they have been evicted. They will wrap up play on September 2nd, and then be asked to leave. They'd only made 3 of
48
payments. So they have been quite patient, to say the least, over there in KCK.
$760,000 in arrears they are to the in both utilities and rent.
We mentioned that Andy Reid, Tommy Moe talking about Andy Reid better have just Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball around, which, by the way, only Mahomes and Henny. Threw the ball last year.
Right.
By the way, I'm going to figure this out, too. Okay. So, Curtis, the Chiefs' record, they have had 6 attempts of a pass by a Kansas City Chief that was not a quarterback during the tenure.
Correct.
Of one Andy Reid. We looked up 2 of them. One is Colquitt.
On a fake field goal, he hit Travis Kelce for a first down at Pittsburgh in 2014.
All right, and one is Cairo Santos.
And we really can't tell exactly what that was. Santos in a field goal does not seem to move, but it looked like Oakland broke through a line and
but Santos doesn't even
ball,
step
went,
forward, and then all of a sudden Colquitt flips it to him, and then he throws it.
He threw a pass to Anthony Sherman for 3 yards on 4th and 21.
So take your pick. We threw those 2 out because those were not offensive ones.
Right.
But overall, the Chiefs are then 3-1. In quote-unquote trick plays when they've had guys throw the ball.
Jeremy Maclin at Oakland, a win. Dontari Poe against Denver, a win. Tyreek Hill against Denver, a win. And then Travis Kelce at the Giants, that awful game when nothing went right, a loss. So 3-1, a 750 win percentage.
All right, I want to point this out that, again, none of these happened last year.
Correct.
Right? When Patrick Mahomes was the quarterback, they didn't attempt one of these plays. They went 12-4. That's a 750 win percentage, which is the exact same win percentage, 3-1, that they had when they attempted a pass.
A non-QB pass attempt on offense.
Has resulted in a 750 win percentage. When they don't, under Andy Reid, it's a 674 win percentage. When they don't, and don't have Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback, it's 657. So, Tommy Moe, you should shut your trap. We'll call in here with your attitude towards Andy Reid unless you're going to get your facts straight. This is one for Danny Klinkscale as well, because he's of the mindset, no trick plays. They're 3-1 when he gives it to somebody else to throw the ball. Now, I think that more states, he only does it when they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they win because Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce threw interceptions. They won both those games, did they not?
No, Kelce was a loss. That was a game at the Giants.
So they win. They generally do these when they're winning.
Yeah.
We're okay. If Big Red says, let one fly, Damian Williams, nobody needs to freak out.
Doggone it. That's how we roll, man.
All right, by the way, Jalen Hurts has been named the starting quarterback of at Oklahoma. And stunningly, likewise, Ohio State names Justin Fields the starting quarterback. He's the number one recruit in the country that went to Georgia last year, transferred out, not sitting out. He'll be the number one quarterback for the Buckeyes. Big surprise that both the transfers are going to start. That was stunning to hear. Yeah. I like this one a lot, so I'm going to read it next. Howard University is bringing back its golf teams. Has not had golf in decades. Do you want to know why, Curtis?
Why?
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Steph Curry announced Monday that he will financially support the Bison's golf teams for the next 6 years. Steph Curry loves golf. He's really good at it.
Yeah.
But yet, while supporting a college's, that's not even his college,
yeah,
golf team so they can bring back golf. Jed, you still don't like Steph Curry.
Nope. What a clown.
But he chews on his mouthpiece.
You're such a putz.
And he does the shimmy.
Marshall, you're such a putz. Seriously.
I have no defense for that. It's true. It's factually accurate.
How can you not get that? Like,
I'm the one who found that damn story. I think that's a cool story. Nah, it doesn't make me like Steph Curry anymore.
It's better if they don't know you found that story.
Well, it was pretty hard to piece together since you asked Kay if he had seen it. It
could have been me.
But yeah, he did find it.
You kind of had some other responsibilities. You know, hosting the radio show.
Yeah,
but
he could have been me.
He found the story and then says it doesn't move the needle at all with him. So
I said it was cool.
But it didn't move the needle, though. You are dug in.
I found it compelling enough to talk about on the radio show I work
that's
on.
True. Yeah,
that's true.
That's true. That's true. Baseball news, Chris Sale. Looks like he's going to avoid Tommy John surgery after getting a second opinion on his injured left elbow from Dr. James Andrews, who's just really nailed it on every surgery he's had of late. Confirmed a previous diagnosis of inflammation. I wonder if he even looked at it. Just went, sure.
Yeah, looks good.
Billy Hamilton's been claimed off waivers.
Hello.
Royals DFA'd him last week. Now he's an Atlanta Brave. Couldn't have traded him somewhere.
Gained about 30 games in the standings.
Yeah. DK Metcalf needs surgery, but Coach Pete Carroll is optimistic he won't be sidelined for long. Derrick Henry returned to practice for the Titans. If you're looking at him for your fantasy football, he is back at practice after a calf injury. And Julian Edelman has reportedly been removed from the Patriots' non-football injury list. Get him wherever he belongs in your receiver list in fantasy football. Thanks, everybody, who joined us in the program today. We're back at it tomorrow, 2 o'clock.